Welcome back to Stand-Up Comedy Secrets for Beginners. I'm Ron Temple, and I'm here again with leading stand-up comedy expert Steve Roy. Steve, did you ever have any big breaks during your stand-up comedy career?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I will tell you that I don't think the breaks that I had were earth-shattering per se, but I had some significant events that happened that may fall into the big break category. I mean, a lot of people think of big breaks as they get discovered, the big TV helicopter comes in, lands on their front lawn, takes them off, and then they're rich and famous.
Didn't have it, huh?
Well, you know, but there were some significant things that happened to me, and if you go through the biographies of other entertainers, not just comedians, but everybody, more than not, they will say that there wasn't any one significant event that led to their fame and fortune or success or what have you. It was all these kind of little events that led up along the way. You know, it's like watching your kids grow. You don't just wake up one day and your kid's 6 foot tall. You know, it happens over a period of time.
And my experience with you was like the uncle that lives out of town that comes in every year or so and sees the kids have grown. Because that's what I saw with you. It looked like you just went from zero to funny. And we've had that conversation, but zero to funny. And then to find out that you actually were struggling at first really, really was a surprise to me.
Well, again, I did have some significant things that happened during my stand-up comedy adventure. And the very first thing people should already know about this if they've checked out the first episode, the first big break that I got was winning that comedy competition at Camp Pendleton for military members. Which led me to, well, it gave me a 10-minute spot at the improv. Well, that was a big deal, man, because I went in there and not only did I nail it during my performance, which I believe you were there during that thing.
I was.
I managed to put 60 or 70 butts in the seats from passing out tickets, letting people know that I was there. Now, keep in mind, you know, I was in the military. There wasn't a lot of military people doing stand-up comedy. None that I can remember during my time. So it was a real novelty thing to have some guy that's on active duty, and he's a chief, and he's at the improv. I mean, you know, there was kind of this, you know, wow, I got to see what the deal is. Well, that one performance led to a monthly performance there, and not as an opening act, but as a special guest feature act for the next 8 or 9 months until they closed. So that was a pretty big deal, man.
And that's what I said. I was there. I got to see many of those performances, and mainly because you did give us free tickets.
Well,
which was nice.
Working at the improv, being able to work at the improv the way I did, led to other performances that got me into the comedy night out at Oceanside when it was alive. And going into the comedy night got me into Checkers, which was their offshoot comedy club downtown in San Diego. Do you see how this rolls?
And then in between, I mean, there was a big period of time that you were doing a lot at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, too.
Well, right? that actually happened later. I couldn't really get much time at La Jolla. Not at the beginning. Now, I worked my way into a situation where I was performing every month in La Jolla as a headlining act.
And that's what I was remembering, yeah, because it was headliner stuff when you were in La Jolla.
Yeah, so, but as far as big breaks go, winning that stand-up comedy competition was huge for me. The second most significant break that I can think of happened kind of by accident, and I'm going to tell you this story. This is going to blow you away. The Coach House. You're familiar with the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano.
Right.
Well, there was a time where they had the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano. They had the Galaxy Concert Theater in Santa Ana, which I believe they still have. They had the the Ventura Concert Theater, which was theirs, and they actually moved, they set up a room in San Diego, Coach House in San Diego. Well, I didn't think much of it at the time. You know, it's nothing that I went down and talked to them about or nothing. So they had been in business for maybe 6 weeks, and I get this call from a friend of mine. Now, he was a comedian. He was a guy who fancied himself as being funny. He wasn't even an opening act. He wasn't very good at all at stand-up comedy, but he was in high-level sales, and he had made so much money that he had said, okay, I've got enough money to live on. I'm going to make this stand-up comedy thing work for me. Well, the guy was about as funny as an inflamed hemorrhoid, if you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, not funny.
And well, he wasn't funny at all. He couldn't get the laughs. I mean, I hung out with him because I was new in the business and I didn't know. And he had showed me tapes. One in particular where he goes, man, I was killing at this thing. Check out this tape. And I went over, and fortunately he had offered beer. Yeah. Because if there had not been any beer, it would have been a bust. I mean, he got two coughs and a sneeze during this thing and thought he was killing. And I was like, yeah, okay, well, good for you. Well, I didn't hear from him for a while. He wasn't somebody that I wanted to hang out with because the guy wasn't very funny. I get this call on the phone. He goes, hey, how would you like to be a feature act at the Coach House, the new Coach House in San Diego? And I said, okay, what do I got to do? He goes, all I need you to do is promote the show. And I said, that's not a problem. As long as they've got the tickets, I can promote the show. And it was, you know, it was a free show, and I could draw a crowd. That was already determined from the improv stuff that I had done. And so I asked him the question. I said, who's headlining the show? And he said, I am. I was like, okay. All right, dude. And I knew right then, I was like, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. This is terrible. This is a train wreck. That's about to happen. So the show gets set up, and I go down there for my part of the show. I knew the opening act. He came out, and I had promoted this show. And out of about 250 people that were in that room, that was a 450-seat room. Out of 250 people that were there, 225 were folks that were there as a result of my tickets that I had passed out.
Yeah, I got one.
So the first comedian gets up. His name's Kurt. He's a good friend of mine. Gets up, opens the show perfectly. I come out and I nail 30 minutes. Just bang, bang, bang. I pound this audience. And then Kurt introduces the headliner, which is this guy. And he gets up and, dude, for an hour, he was mercilessly heckled. Mercilessly. I mean, I had gotten to the point in San Diego where I had a grip of comedians that followed me around, and when they knew I was performing someplace, they came and showed up. And you know, people don't realize the stand-up comedy community of comedians is pretty darn small. You can't hardly fart in that community without everybody knowing about it. So I had this grip of comedians that came out, and so after my show, I stepped out, and there were these comedians out there, and they were running in and out of the door going, man, he's getting slaughtered. He is just getting slaughtered. And one of the comedians opened up the door, and people were going, tell a joke! You're not funny! Tell us! I mean, it was terrible, man.
So, but we had talked about an earlier show where you saw that coming because you knew.
Well, yeah.
You were funnier than him.
Well, it wasn't about me being funnier than him. I knew what I was doing. I knew that I could deliver an act, and I knew that he couldn't. But he had managed to talk his way into a headliner spot. Because they were new. They were looking at running a comedy show. He knew I promoted shows. I mean, he was smart from that perspective to promote the show that way. Well, here's the part that I didn't know at the time. The club manager that was scheduled to be there for that night got sick. And so guess who took his place? A guy named Roger.
Oh, okay.
A guy named Roger, who was the general manager of all the Coach House properties.
Ah.
Now, I didn't know this. I didn't know this at all. So I had killed, this guy was, he had just tanked so bad it was terrible. And so at the end of the show, you go to get paid. And the way it works is there's the whole pecking order thing. You know, the headliner gets paid first, the feature act gets paid next, and then the opening act gets paid last, right? So I'm standing in line at the office door waiting to get paid, and this guy walks out, and he's as white as a ghost. White as a ghost. And I said, well, better luck next time. And he didn't even acknowledge me, dude. He was in shock.
It was his first big experience.
Oh, it was his first big experience at sucking for an hour. I mean, he had an hour show. He told me he had an hour show, and he stayed on stage for an hour. dude, you don't get that many hecklers at a political rally, you know? I'm just telling you. He was beat up, and he was so shaken, he couldn't even acknowledge me. So I go into the office, and there's Roger sitting there, and he looks at me and goes, where in the heck did you come from? And I went, I'm just a local comedian. I really like doing stand-up, and I have a lot of fun at it. And he goes, you know what? You're going to be working a lot for us. And that one gig led to opening for the Beach Boys, Chris Isaak, Tower of Power, Bobcat Goldthwait, on and on and on, working with the Coach House Chain, just because of that one gig. And that was a big deal, man. I was getting work, and I was working every month, sometimes twice a month, for the Coach House, because I was willing to do opening act, feature act, and headliner stuff. And when I went in, you know, I was headlining at the Coach House, and I actually cut my CD in 1995. I cut a CD from that Coach House in San Diego. Now, when I went to the other venues that they had, I started out as an opening act. And I went in, I do my opening act stuff, and their feature act, who'd been on Letterman, been on The Tonight Show, been on this, been on Comedy Central, couldn't follow me. Dude, they'd get up and they'd tank. And so I quickly moved into the middle spot. Well, here we go again. They had a number of headliners when I was scheduled for the middle spot, and I would just nail this audience. Well, they couldn't follow me. And it took a very short amount of time before I was headlining those gigs, those same gigs. You know, so if somebody's out there listening to this and think they've got to get a bunch of TV credits before they get some killer good spots, that's not true. I didn't have one TV credit.
We had talked about in an earlier show that TV credits are, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing, but it's not necessary to make a living at doing this.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I wouldn't discourage anyone from going for any TV credits, because that's really the ultimate. But for me, I wasn't interested in it, but I'm just going to tell you, man, so that Coach House thing was a big deal. Now, that Coach House involvement led to me headlining at 4th and B.
Well, that was a big, big venue.
Oh, huge venue. I love that venue. That people were great, and man, I could sail there. You know, it was just so much fun, and I got so much work out of that. Got to open for Eddie Money there at the time. Was pretty good act. And on and on and on. So those kinds of things constitute big breaks for me. Another thing that was a big break, I thought it was a big break, is I was on vacation, and this was in 1996, I want to say, and I decided to stop by. It was on our way. I decided to stop by the comedy club in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I believe it's called Laughs. And I went in there, talked with the owner, told him I was a headliner from California. I said, I'd like to showcase for some work. And he said, sure, we'll give you 10 minutes tonight. So I took my family over to get something to eat, and I said, I'll be back. I went over, did my guest set, killed him, said, hey, what do you think? He goes, I'll be calling you. And I went and got a week there the next April.
Oh, very good.
And here's the thing. Had he not died in a motorcycle accident 3 months later, I would have been there two or three times a year. But once he died, the club ownership changed hands, and they didn't know me, and he was a different sort of guy. And so that was a potentially huge break to me to be able to establish yourself at a comedy club like that, especially out of town, over in New Mexico, far away from my home base. But it was, oh God, it was such a great gig. So those are the kinds of big breaks, I guess you want to call them. You know, I did this was very early in my career in 1994, less than 2 years after I had been starting, won that comedy competition, I got to do the Navy Ball for the medical command. They invited me. I got paid good money for that, $500 to do 45 minutes. That one gig resulted in dozens of Navy parties and dozens of corporate gigs because I killed at that thing. And, you know, a lot of military members, their wives work in pretty high level places. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
Yeah. So they're with companies and they go, hey, we'd like to have that guy at our company event. What happened?
Well,
so
my brain was going a whole different direction there, and I didn't mean to stall for a second. But what was happening is I got to go to a lot of those because I knew you. And being that we were both Navy, not only did I get to go to that medical event that I was invited to, I also got to go to events that you were scheduled in other areas, and worked out really well for as far as things to do and unbelievable parties that the military at that time put on.
Yeah, and, fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, and so that was kind of, and that's what I was thinking. I'd forgotten all about that, the Navy gigs that you had done during that period of time. And so it took me back a little bit, some memories, some nice memories. So
yeah, well, like I said, I mean that rolled into not only Navy gigs but other corporate gigs, which was fantastic. I got to do some fantastic stuff. But you know, as far as any breakout stuff, it's been what I've told you. Now, the only breakout thing that I've had, the only what I would consider a big break after retiring from stand-up comedy, had to do with being featured in I Am Comic for my Comedy Evaluator Pro software.
Well, that was a question I was going to ask you. You developed a type of software for comedians, and this is a good time to talk about it. Can we hear about that now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's what happened. I mean, this all happened by accident. I had already had launched my website for Killer Stand-Up in 2001, and here it was 2003, and I get contacted by Club Med in Cancun, and they said, hey, we would like to host you and your wife for a week to come down and evaluate our shows and to see what you could do for us. And I was like, oh my goodness, yeah, I can do that. So man, I go down to Club Med in Cancun. The flight was paid, the place was paid, everything was paid. And so what I had to do was consume the comedy shows that they did, that they offered during a week of Club Med vacation. Are you with me?
I'm there.
Okay, so we're in the end of the week meeting, and their big deal was, and they had, their head executive had, or one of their executives had relayed to me that the type of entertainment that they put on there was a little bit dated as far as comedy material. And they were very upfront about this. They said, you know, in the, where Club Med is in the Mediterranean, in Europe and those types of things, they do a more of a vaudeville, Borscht Belt, old-timey kind of comedy. It goes over really well. But in Cancun, their biggest clientele was Americans. And they tend to be a little more sophisticated on their comedy and whatnot. And so they were wanting to punch their shows up to get the best result that they could get. And so the question that I was asked at the end of that whole week was, can you help us improve our shows? And I said, absolutely. And they said, and the next words out of the president's mouth there was, how would we know we're making progress, that we're getting what we paid for if we hired you to help us? And I went, You know, hold on. I'm going to have to get back with you on that. And, dude, I went home and I went, how do you quantify comedy? Something that's so subjective. How do you quantify that? Now, keep in mind that I came from the Navy, which is no different than any other big organization. It's all about metrics, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Numbers, budgets, performance levels, yada, yada, yada. They want some hard statistics.
Yeah, if you can't prove it, it doesn't exist in their mind. Yeah.
Oh, no. It's gone. And so here I was grappling with this whole thing about, oh, my, how can I even answer this guy with something that's so subjective? And I pondered this. I couldn't sleep for 3 days over this. I just was like, man, I just can't believe this. And then it hit me. Yes, I can objectively measure progress, because here's the deal. There's two things that happens when comedy's happening. Doesn't matter whether it's on the big screen, doesn't matter if it's live, doesn't matter. Do you know what those two things are?
No.
The entertainer or entertainers are talking, or the audience is laughing.
Oh, okay. So I did know.
No, I'm just saying that people don't look at it that way.
Yeah,
I mean, these are the two big events that happen during a comedy show. You know, keep in mind, comedy, unlike music, is frequently reactive. Meaning to say, comedian talks, the audience laughs. Comedian talks, the audience laughs. Or the comedy troupe does what they do, the audience laughs. I mean, it's very reactive. It's not like a song where they can start out a song, get some applause, they go through the whole song, and at the end, woohoo, yay, wah. And here's the thing. The amount of time that a person is on stage is measurable. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So what you're telling me is that you understand that if a person has been on stage for 2 minutes, they've been on stage for 160 seconds.
Yeah, we looked this up one time. Right?
Well, yeah, we did look this up one time. You know, you think I'm being silly about this, but people don't get what I'm telling you.
Oh, I know.
Okay. Now, here's the other part. Laughter. Audience laughter. Does it take up any time?
Yes. You have to wait till they finish laughing.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do, is wait till they're finished laughing before you start talking. Okay? So, audience laughter takes up time. So, I came up with this model, and I presented this to them, and they didn't hire me. But I just kept on with this because I thought, man, this is the lick right here. Here's the thing. You can tell how funny somebody is every single minute of their act, because laughing takes up time. Well, I've already told you, man, the big guns can generate 4 to 6 laughs per minute, right?
Right.
Well, those laughs take up time. So I set out, and the first thing I did was I had 2 stopwatches, and I was trying to do something with my own stand-up comedy performances, because I recorded them. And so I tried to do this with 2 stopwatches, and you can't hardly do it. You need another arm to sit there and write down how many seconds on the one stopwatch, and then the other stopwatch is not such a big deal because that tells you your total time. But do you understand where there's a problem here? And then you need two more sets of eyeballs. So if you have another arm and 2 more sets of eyeballs, it can become really easy to do this. And I thought, man, this is too hard. I can't do this. I'd have to go through videos over and over and over again just to get the data that I needed, this objective metric that we were talking about. And so I said, you know what? I think I can program this to happen automatically. And that's exactly what I did. And that was the development of my software, and launched in October of 2003. I launched a software, which all you had to do was listen to your act. You started a start button that would record the time that you were on stage. And then you just hovered over a button for the length of time that people were laughing. Because we had already talked about this before. If the comedian starts talking, the audience stops laughing because they can't do both at the same time. They can't listen to what the comedian has to say and laugh at the same time. It's just, that's one of those physical things. It's like you can't sneeze and keep your eyes open.
Can't. Yeah, no, I know.
Well, yeah, you can go ahead and try.
I think I have. I think somebody else said that. I go, next time I sneeze, I'm keeping my eyes open. pull your eyes right out
of
your cheek.
Yeah, but you've been known to jackal people and tell them lies.
Yeah.
See, so, yeah, that doesn't count, dude.
Okay.
But that's all I'm saying. So I launched a software that does this measurement, this post-performance measurement, and I saw an immediate benefit in this because there's no jacking around. And I had mentioned this before, that when a comedian's on stage, they're in performing mode. They're not in self-evaluation mode, or they shouldn't be. Not at all. Unless it's an emergency situation, they need to change material for some reason. But you get what I'm saying? You should be up there focused on performing. There's times when you get off stage that you don't know how well you performed. You have no indication other than what you remembered. And what you remembered might be different than what actually happened. Now, we haven't really hit on this a lot, but there's a huge aspect of denial in this business where people think they are killing and they're not even close.
Yeah. Now your software, this became recognized, as you'd said earlier. You ended up doing a documentary, part of a documentary on this.
Yeah. So, well, let me just go back. Let me lead up to that.
Well, I wasn't going to take you early, fast. What I was going to just say is that we went from subjective to objective. This was objective data that you were developing.
Yes. And here's the thing. Now, once I developed this, I not only went through my act, but I went through dozens, and over the years, now it's been hundreds and hundreds of folks delivering stand-up comedy material. I'm talking about professionals, brand new people, and everyone in between, and I'm able to gauge exactly where they're at based on this. And it basically works like this. If you're able to generate 18 seconds of laughter on average every minute that you're on stage, you're performing at headliner level, period, end of story.
Well, let me see if I understand that 18 seconds, because you're getting 4 to 6 laughs per minute. Each laugh, if there were 4 to 6 laughs per minute, that you're pulling out a few seconds for each laugh, that adds up to that 18.
Just so that you know that the average length of laughter for a headline level performance is average now 3 seconds of audience laughter plus or minus a second.
Okay. So you've created, sounds like at least objective curve even on.
Well, I'm just,
standard deviations, a little statistical.
I'm just saying, dude, I went back to stand-up comedy performances in the 60s, 70s, 80s. It doesn't matter. If you take a look at the people who are on the top of the pile, I can bet my house that they're producing 18 or more seconds on average of laughter each minute they're on stage. End of story.
So there's a quality of laughter we talked about earlier too. So the quality of laughter is really based on, how strong that laughter is too. Does your software address that?
No, not directly. Here's the thing. If you want to talk about laughter intensity, that's a really good question. Laughter intensity is relative to the length of the laughter. For example, if you create a laugh, and I've seen this, that's 20 seconds long, that's huge. That's a massively intensive laugh based on the length of the laugh.
Yeah, and I've seen that. I've actually
okay.
One of our favorite comedians did that to me. I know a couple of times.
Yeah, again, I talk about an average of 18 seconds per minute. Well, that's called a par score. That's the basis for the par score of 30. Now, a par score is nothing more. It's positive audience response. It's laughter, cheering, or applause. And that's measured by my software. So if you get 18 seconds of laughter in a minute, that's a par score of 30. Here's the best. It's nothing more than a percentage of a minute.
Right.
And the way to understand this best is if you were getting 20 seconds of laughter per minute, what percentage of that minute are you generating laughter?
20 seconds, a third.
Yeah, 33. That would be a par score of 33. Now, my own stand-up comedy stuff ranged in the 22 to 24 seconds of laughter per minute range. So if you want to know why I got work, why I got the breaks I got, the things that happened to me, it's because I could generate 22 to 24 seconds of laughter every minute I was on stage.
That's a high score. So now I'm going to go back to the new comedian, this beginning comedian, beginning stand-up. This software would help them, or at least being able to analyze where they're at.
Well, here's what it'll do, and keep in mind that there's been a lot of negative commentary about my software, mostly by armchair comedians who couldn't find their ass with a 50-man working party when it came to stand-up comedy. They have no clue about what's going on. I mean, I've seen comments like, does it tell how many watermelons you smash in a minute? You know, crap like that. They don't get it. But they're not in the game. They're not in the game to win it. They're not in the game to get recognized, to get an agent, to go forward in this business. But your question was, how does this help new comedians? Let me just say this. If a new comedian gets on stage and does a recording, everything's done on a recording, and this is a measurement tool to measure not only how many laughs someone gets in a minute, but how many seconds of laughter they get in a minute, and then does an overall. Tells you what your average was overall. So like for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, doesn't matter. Tells you what you did. So for the new comedian that gets on stage and they suck from beginning to end, my software has no value.
They're not getting laughs.
Well, you got to have something to base on. What are they going to measure? Suck?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, you know, you can't measure crickets on this thing. So you got to get some laughs. Now, what this can do is if you're getting some laughs, that will tell you indirectly that, well, no, it'll tell you directly that you're talking too much before your punchlines. You don't have the punchline frequency that you, because if you're only getting two laughs per minute, well, that means you're talking too much before the punchlines, right?
Yeah, one of our earlier shows, we talked about the setup and punch. And that's, you're saying probably during the setup portion, they're just talking too much. That would be the indication.
Yeah, and then this would be an indication that, remember, this software is for post-performance review. It doesn't do anything for you in advance. You need to know how to develop and deliver your material to the ultimate extent that you can before you ever start to use my software. You need to be able to do that so that you have at least some foundation. The whole idea is to say, okay, I'm talking too much. I'm only getting two laughs in a minute. And here's the key. If someone can get two laughs in a minute, they can get four laughs in a minute. And if they can get four laughs in a minute, they can probably get six laughs in a minute. If their stuff is structured properly. So this is a tool to help identify weak areas. And I've seen this happen before where a comedian will get on, they'll kill for 2 minutes, and then it's dead for a minute. And then they'll pick up a little bit and maybe kill at the end. Well, there's some problems there. You need to be able to kill from the beginning of your act to the end of your act, if that makes sense.
Well, it does, because if I'm sitting out there and all of a sudden there's a lull, I'm ordering another drink.
Well, you don't want to have any lulls. You want the tightest act that you can have. So what you would want to do is evaluate and say, okay, I need to restructure what I'm doing in this area. I don't have enough punchlines. And if you think about it, there's only a couple of things that you can do, Ron. You can either add more punchlines or take out setup lines. That's really all you can do. There's no magic here, but the big deal is to strive to get this 18 seconds of laughter per minute. Now I'm going to tell you what people can verify right now. They could go onto any stand-up comedy performance on TV. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's on a late night TV show, if it's on a Showtime special and what have you. And I can promise you, I'll bet my house that those comedians are delivering 18 plus seconds of laughter per minute. That's what I can tell you.
And that's pretty consistent. But someone that wanted just to evaluate themselves or their own recording.
Well, that's really what it's for, because like I said, there are people, and this has happened to me. You get on stage, you think you killed, and you really didn't do as good as you thought you did. And then there's other times when you get on stage, you didn't think you did very well, and you actually nailed it. Like I said, when you get on stage as a comedian, you're in performance mode. You're not in self-evaluation mode. You should do that after the fact. And I'm going to tell you a little secret right now. Comedians who know how to develop and deliver their material, they know how to rehearse. A lot of comedians do not know how to rehearse. They don't have a structure or anything like that, which could shave years off their time. But if they'll go back and objectively review their recordings, whether it be audio, video, what have you, I'm going to tell you that can shave years off the time it takes to get where you want to be in stand-up comedy. Make no mistake.
But you say objectively, look, which is really, really difficult to look at yourself, other than objectively, because I think most of us, when we take a recording of ourselves or a video of ourselves, we're so self-critical that that's got to be pretty difficult to learn how to evaluate yourself.
Well, you know what? If an individual's truly serious about this, I'm one of those people that I don't like the way I sound. I don't like the way I look. You got to get past that. It's all about delivering the goods to those butts in the seats. That's what's going to get you where you need to go. That's what's going to get you recognized. And so if you take a look at yourself from that perspective and you're critical of yourself from that perspective, and not only that, but you have a means to have metrics to what you're doing. I mean, think about this. Without my software, without a means to evaluate how many laughs you got in a minute, how long each laugh was, because that's what my software tells you, how long each laugh was, how many laughs you got, how long the performance evaluation does, and it prints out this whole report. Now, if you were a comedian and you recorded your act, what would you look for? What would you know how to fix looking at yourself if you didn't know what to do? Honestly.
Well, as I said, so, and I think you said something really important, I think, and I'm going to use me as an example. I hate my voice. I hate my video when I look at it. It happens a lot being an instructor, so I know it happens, but I never got over it. And I think that's really important for you to say and say that again and again. You have to get over what
just in all fairness, I've seen what you look like for years, and I can understand why you have these thoughts. And,
and those who are listening to my voice right now are probably going through the same thing. Yeah, somebody said I had a face for radio. Well, and I have a voice for television. So look out.
Yeah, there you go. You're dialed in.
But it is important because it is hard. That is really a difficult thing. And us that have been in this world for a long time, and we still suffer from that. So you saying get over it, you did. In fact, I think one of our earlier shows, you even talked about some of the things you didn't care for, your voice, or your accent, and so on. But it was delivering the goods. It was working. So,
well, you know what? I reviewed my stand-up comedy performances for years and years before I ever had this kind of software that would tell me straight up what the deal was. And let me just put it to you in the most prolific terms that I can. Anybody who's able to generate 18-plus laughs per minute, I don't care who they are, brand new, they've been doing it for a year, they've been doing it for however many years, they're moving, they're going places, they're having people come up and go, hey, I'd like for you to perform at this thing, okay? The reality is, in this business, there's a lot of people that can't generate 18 seconds of laughter per minute. They can't generate 14 seconds of laughter per minute. They can't generate 12 seconds of laughter per minute and think that they're entitled because it's like a government job. Oh, well, I've been doing this for 5 years. And they can't look at their act and understand why they're not getting anywhere. I know that sounds bad. That sounds terrible. But here's the thing. I'm one of those guys that tells the truth. And I know what got me where I was able to go without one single TV credit. And I also know what gets other people who think they're on fire. When they're not on fire, they're soaking wet. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And that self-evaluation is an important role in anything we do in life, really. You know, and you've heard me say it a couple of times on this show, is do what works and quit doing what doesn't work. And well, if we could figure that out, and this, I think your software is going to help somebody understand, they can see what works.
Well, it has helped people, the people that will use it. Now, fast forward to 2010, I get contacted by a guy named Jordan Brady. He says, hey, I'm doing a documentary about comedians. I found your software interesting. I would like to have you in the documentary. And so I was like, wow, okay, this is cool. Now, I didn't realize what was going on at the time, but Jordan Brady was a comedian from the 80s who took his success and turned it into a filmmaking career. Okay, as a matter of fact, you know Jordan Brady from something that you hear every year on TV if you watch any TV.
Go ahead, tell
me. Okay, here's the deal. Have you ever heard of people talk about pornos and then they start doing the porno music? Bow chicka bow 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 chicka bow wow. Have you heard that?
Absolutely.
Okay. That was Jordan Brady who did that first.
That was his,
and it's been used for years and years and years. Well, like I said, he was a filmmaker, so they invited me to get filmed. They offered to come out here. I said, you know what? I just happened to be going to L.A. at that time. I had a client that I was dealing with there. And so this will work out great. So I go out to L.A. I get filmed for this thing. Well, his partner in crime for this documentary is Rich Scheidner. Now, Rich Scheidner was one of my heroes. Stand-up comedy heroes. When I was first starting stand-up comedy, I was like, man, I want to do stand-up comedy like that guy. I mean, he was bad to the bone. He could nail it.
Yeah, he's funny.
And he went from stand-up comedy into writing for shows like Roseanne and a bunch of other shows. I mean, he just really transitioned the other way. So I go to this filming that was at their office there with my software, and what they had done is they had picked out a grip of stand-up comedy videos for me to evaluate with my software. And, you know, there was one there, I want to say it's Jeff Foxworthy, there was one there, and, you know, and they didn't even know how my stuff worked. They thought, how is this going to help somebody develop a routine? And I was like, this doesn't help you develop a routine. This helps you evaluate your routine for after-the-fact edits, additions, subtractions, those types of things. Didn't understand that at all. Well, they gave me this thing, you know, and so I go through all these different things. Tommy Davidson was one that I did. He's on fire. Todd Glass was another one. He wasn't so much on fire. And it was sad that they gave me that particular video to review because it didn't represent Todd Glass the way I've seen him. See, Todd Glass didn't know that I had actually met him at the Improv when it was open in San Diego. He didn't know that. And he went on to say how my software sucked. It was not accurate, blah, 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 blah. Because people don't get this. Rich Scheidner, when I went in there, was asking me all these pointed questions, blah, 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 about this. And I said, look, dude, all this does is measure how much laughs you're able to get in a minute. In seconds. That's it. It's after the fact recognition. This doesn't help you develop anything. He did not know this. So one of the videos, and this is in, this was filmed for I Am Comic, which is the name of the documentary. And one of the videos that I had to evaluate was him trying to do stand-up comedy after like 15 years or something. Hadn't been on stage.
He was stepping back into that world.
Oh, dude, and he blew chunks.
It was not good.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm reviewing this video, and I said, dude, this is open mic performance level. I mean, I had to be straight up with him. I couldn't help it. It was right there. It's right there in the documentary, and that's the truth.
How was he with that, you know?
He was kind of bummed out, but he didn't realize what my software did. He didn't realize it was a post-performance evaluation thing. And so when we all got done with this, with the filming, he looked at, well, we were still filming, and this was the one scene that got cut out of this movie that I wish was in there. He goes, knowing what I know about this software and what it does, I can't imagine why any comedian wouldn't use this to get better. And I said, you want to know why? And he goes, no. I said, the reason being that people don't want to use the software is because comedians don't want to know how bad they suck.
And that got cut.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Wonder why.
That didn't make it into the flick. But I was honored to be a part of that documentary because, I mean, think about this. I'm on there with all these big names, Jeff Foxworthy, Phyllis Diller, on and on and on. I mean, there was just all these big name comedians, and then my little segment in there about Comedy Evaluator Pro. Well, I don't care what anybody says about Comedy Evaluator Pro. All I know is that if you can't generate 18 seconds or more of laughter each minute, you're not going anywhere. And the reason I can say that is because there's too many people that are able to, and they're able to do this every year, whether they use my software or not. They're able to generate 18, right, 19, 21 seconds of laughter per minute, every minute they're on stage.
And you went through, that's what you did, is you actually went through and evaluated the comics. The big
there was Sam Kinison, George Carlin, David Brenner, Joan Rivers, on and on and on. I mean, Chris Rock. I can't, Fluffy. I can't even tell you all the people.
The evaluator would show that these guys were high level performing comedians, but did you catch them at some bad moments? Did you see a few times where they went down?
You know what? Because pro comedians know that they're not going to put anything online that's not killing.
Okay.
Unless they, you know, get a brain tumor or something, they're not going to put something online for public consumption. Are you kidding me? We're in the social media age now, dude. You don't put up stuff that doesn't work.
Right. Now, but this was 2010 when you started this, when you actually started trying to develop your data.
No. That data was developed back starting in 2003.
Oh, okay.
I have years and years, thousands of evaluations of different comedians.
But you launched the software in 2010, or did I just get my dates wrong?
No, you got your dates wrong. I launched the software in 2003. 2010 is when I Am Comic was filmed and released.
Okay, good. I knew I heard 2010 for something, but it was actually when you did the documentary. I've seen the documentary. Friends and family have seen the documentary, and it does put in a really positive light on the software, the Evaluator Pro. It was actually very good to see you in that light, because we know you're the comedian's friend and a comic expert.
Well, I'll just tell you, it is a great tool for people that want to use it. Now, I can't force people to use it. I don't do that. People get a year of access who sign up for my course. And they get that year of access whenever they want it. I mean, my course is lifetime access. So any time that they're ready to roll, they can evaluate themselves. The big thing is to not fool yourself. You know, give yourself more laughs than you really are getting. That doesn't help anybody. You know, and there's a big, there's a huge factor of denial in stand-up comedy. I'm telling you, there are people who think that they're really the cat's meow, and they're not even a hairball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I wish I didn't.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be mean, but I'm just telling you, for people that want to really move fast in this business, I mean, you know, again, I'm going to talk about the process. And it's all about knowing how to develop, deliver, rehearse, and evaluate your stand-up comedy material. And if you know how to do all these things and you're willing to put that kind of effort in, you're going to move fast. unless you don't have any comedy talent, you're going to move fast. But people want to jack around with, yeah, okay, well, I'll kind of do this, and I'll kind of do that, and I'll halfway do this, and I'll halfway do that. And, you know, and then they wonder why they haven't made any progress in 2-3 years when they should be just on fire.
Yeah, and we say that all the time. You know, we do know that we have to evaluate what works and stop doing what doesn't work. All right, well, we've run out of time, but there's more to come. So don't miss the next episode when we reveal more stand-up comedy secrets for beginners.